This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Okay, everybody, we took this week off, but we're going to share one of our classic episodes. Enjoy.
Million. Shouldn't have done that. He was a good man.
In, through, and beyond. In. Through and beyond.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me via the interwebs is
Matthew Giant Spider Haas.
Alrighty. So you're really on the webs.
Yep.
As a spider.
And literally on the World Wide Web, yes.
Yes. Giant World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
There's an invasion.
There's an invasion of webs. And lots of worldwide thereof takeover.
Damn it. So today we're covering a nice little silly sci-fi film that was released on October 24th, 1975. The classic The Giant Spider Invasion, directed by Bill Rabane and written by Robert Easton and Richard L. Huff. Music by Bill Rabane. And starring the likes of Steve Brody as Dr. J.R. Vance, Barbara Hale as Dr. Jenny Langer, Alan Skipper Hale Jr. as Sheriff Jones. Skipper, as in Gilligan's big buddy. Anyways, and then we have Leslie Parrish as Ev Kester and Robert Easton as Dan Kester. Christine Schmittmer as Helga. Kevin Brody, the son of Steve Brody, as Dave Perkins, and Bill Williams as Dutch. Yep.
Good old Dutch.
Yep. And Bill Williams was married to Barbara Hale, who also was in the movie as Dr. Jenny Langer, as we said. So, yeah. There's a little bit of nepotism in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a father and a son, and then there's a husband and wife. And then there's two people with the last name Hale that I don't believe are related to each other. So,
you know, it's a package deal.
Yes.
You get both of us for the price of one, so, you know.
Yes. And the movie did cost $300,000. Which is not a lot of money back then.
No, not even back then.
Yep.
It made $15 million, so that's a pretty good profit.
This was a very successful film. Surprisingly.
Yeah, surprisingly.
It was filmed in Robert Easton, who was a friend of Bill Redbane. I mean, he came up with the idea. Robert Easton was also the creepy pedophilic guy in the movie. And but the film was shot in Merrill, Wisconsin, and Gleason, Wisconsin. So what happened in this movie here, Matt?
So many things. I mean, it's kind of a weird movie like that, where there's actually a lot of dialogue in it, for one thing, which I was surprised to see, because I was expecting some kind of like just silly spectacle type of movie. But really, the first half of the movie is pretty much just mostly dialogue, except for like the very beginning when the eggs or the meteorite or whatever it was crashes into this person's farm, and then you know, we don't really see much of that afterwards, except for like, you know, a spider crawling here and there or whatever. And it kills one person, I think, immediately, but then we don't really see much of that until about, I want to say, almost 40 minutes into the film after that. And basically, it's about this like meteorite or something crashes into this guy's farm in Wisconsin somewhere. And it starts off like a really small spider, but it just keeps getting bigger throughout the movie. They didn't really explain that why it got bigger, but it did. And then and there was like more of them too, like little eggs, so like there was like all kinds of spiders just kind of climbing all over the place around the farm and other parts of the town. It kind of had like this weird like religious undertone to it. Like, I don't know if they were really saying like, you know, it's religious, but like there's like this revivalist preacher in town who was like talking about like the wages of sin and all this kind of stuff. And that kind of played into the whole like apocalyptic aspect of the movie of like, you know, those giant spiders going around and killing people and we can't stop it and all this kind of stuff. And there was like this dude acting in this movie is hilarious. Some of it's really good. Some of it's just terrible. It's kind of weird. It's like you get some people who are like almost acting like they're like Shakespearean, like taking this movie so seriously. Then you've got other people who are like just obviously not really there. You know?
And you literally have Alan Hale Jr. phoning in his performance, because half of his performance is him sitting at his desk on a phone.
Right. Yeah, he's literally phoning in. And he plays this guy who's just like way too like jovial. Like, I mean, like everything's a joke to him, literally everything. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same kind of character he played on Gilligan's Island and like everything else I've ever seen him in, but I've only seen him in a few things, so I don't know. So
Yeah, me too. I've only seen two things. Yeah.
He could have more depth to his acting abilities than I know. I don't know. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what else happened, because I watched it a week ago, and I kind of watched it again. And because there is a lot of depth to it, so it's kind of hard to pin it down, because like it almost seemed like they were trying to make like three different movies all at the same time. So it's kind of hard to like, because like there's so many different like plot points. There's like plot A, there's plot B, and then there's plot C, and it all comes back to the preacher guy at the very end when they start playing his fire and brimstone speech or whatever, or his sermon.
Yeah, I mean, like, according to Wikipedia, there are several subplots. Did you want me to read them off?
Yeah, like, because I can only think of three, but yeah. I mean, three main ones. Like the, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, subplots include Dan Kester and his hate relationship with his wife, Ev. Dan's adulterous affair with the local barmaid, Helga. Dave Perkins' attempt to make out with Ev's underage sister, Terry. A fundamentalist preacher leading a revival meeting. Doctors Vance and Langer getting involved in somewhat of a romance, all the more notable as the two lead actors were also in their early to mid-50s when the movie was made. The eventual panic that results when the townspeople are confronted with the spider. And then the invasion is deduced with various scientific sounding language to be the result of somewhat interdimensional gateway, and is ultimately, and at the end it's thwarted by the doctors. Yeah, it's, this movie is funky as all get out.
Yeah. It really is, because it's like there's so many different like genres going on at once. Like, you got like the stereotypical hick people, and then you got like these sciencey people like using this jargon that nobody. I mean, like, I'm used to hearing stuff like this all the time now from like watching The Flash and stuff. So like oh, I get it. It's a parallel universe. Sure, that's no problem. Like, of course, you know, like, you know, to me, like, but like, I'm thinking 1975 audience. That must have been like way out there. Like,
and even then, I don't know if their science is really scientific, if you will.
Yeah,
it's kind of like pseudoscience for, you know, or gee whiz kind of science for movies. You know, that it's like, yeah, sure, that you know, plot devised science,
right? Because like, yeah, when they said about that. The yeah, because when they said something about like the neutron, I was like, neutron, that's kind of weird, because usually in the newer stuff we're talking about like tachyons or negative tachyons. I'm like, a neutron, that's so old school, man. It's so old school sci-fi. Neutrons, we all know that neutrons can't, you know, cause a parallel dimension. That's like grade school right there. Of course we know that. But no,
I'm a bigger fan. Yeah, I'm a bigger fan of old trons than the neutrons.
yeah, old trons. Yeah, you know, like the old Tron. You know, the movie, of course, yeah. Better than the new one. Yeah. Yes. It is better.
Yeah, it is.
But
I enjoyed the new one though. But
it's good. A sequel, whatever. It's yeah. It's
the
3D good,
but sucked in the movie.
It did. I don't remember.
Yeah, I saw it in the theaters with you. And
oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, right? It was. Like, but still, it. I remember it, and yeah, I just remember the 3D being very underwhelming. Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole like underage thing, that creeped me out the most. Like, you know, like, it's, for one thing, they couldn't even like do like a regular type of relationship thing. Like, they had to make it more complex than they needed to, where it's like, you know, okay, let's just say, you know, he's married to this woman that he hates and she hates him, and she's got a daughter from another relationship, and that's a stepdaughter.
No, actually, it's her sister.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, that would make more sense.
Oh, okay.
Instead
gotcha.
Of having this, yeah, instead of having this weird relationship where that's her younger sister living with her. And so he is like not the stepdad of her, but he's like the legal guardian of her. It's like, why make it more complicated than yeah. it needs to be? You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to like be all like Shakespearean here. Like, oh, this is going to be the movie that's going to break me out or whatever. Come on.
Like, and then like real. Everybody in town wants to get with her.
Like, you know, everyone, like, of course, like the kid, which, you know, he's like 17, so it makes sense. You know, he's like around her age, you know, or whatever. But no,
yeah, he might be 18 or something. I don't know, but yeah, he like well, works, yeah, he works for like, a newspaper. But
that's right. Yeah, he's like the son of the owner of like a newspaper in town or whatever. And he's like the ace reporter, probably nepotism in the movie itself, as well as the making of the movie. So,
yeah. The actor who plays him, that's Dave Perkins, that character, he is the son of the actor who plays Dr. Vance.
Jeez. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
It is interesting. So, like, yeah, he wants to get with her and he takes her to like a junkyard to make out with her. And then I think that's when the car stops working, like all of the electronics start malfunctioning. And then, but yeah, her stepdad / step uncle, step guardian, whatever, he like tries to bribe her for sex with like these diamonds that came inside of the, like that were part of like the eggs or the spiders. Like they had these little diamond things or whatever that really weren't worth much, but if you had a whole bunch of them, they would be worth something. So like he's like trying to like bribe her, which is creepy, and then like not to mention like illegal. I mean, this is Wisconsin in the 70s, who knows back then, you know, whatever. But like, and then like later on, the dude's cousin who works at like a jewelry, like not a shop but like an appraiser or whatever, he comes over to the house and tries to, it's like, okay, we already got one creepy older dude trying to like bribe an underage girl for sex in a movie. It's already weird to begin with and creepy and questionably legal, even at standpoint. Then you got the second guy doing it. It's like, all right, how many times do you want to make this point? Like, what the hell are you doing here? And then,
and everybody in the movie looks like they belong in the Manson family.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And I mean everybody, not just
oh yeah, especially the wife.
Yeah,
she looks like oh yeah too. Not only that, this whole movie starts off with this creepy, like older adult trying to like seduce the younger / underage person. Like why were they obsessed with this in this movie? Like this one theme is like cuts across the entire film, which is about a fucking spider invasion. Like, what does this have to do with a goddamn giant spider? But anyway,
maybe it's so a like, metaphor.
A metaphor.
The spider is the patriarchy trying to yeah. press down upon man and woman and you yeah. know, take yeah. And the yeah, the invasion is the man trying to invade the woman's body and take her
Whoa.
Over and see and invade her soul. And I'm guessing they didn't think that deeply, but
no, I don't think so. That's like a meandering of like a pothead in the 60s. I don't even think they even had that going on for them. I think they were just totally trying to be like shocking. Because, like, in the beginning, it's actually the wife. She's like, an alcoholic. She's always drinking all the time. And she's, like, hitting on the young guy who's waiting on his date, who's her younger sister. He's out the porch waiting on her to get ready. And but, she's but, out on the porch.
But you see, Matt, that's her trying to escape her reality and get out of the oppression that she has from the man.
Maybe, or it could have just been because she was drunk and horny, you know?
No, man, this is deeper.
No, I don't think it's deeper than that at all, because she apparently gets horny when she gets drunk, because later on, she calls that Dutch guy who owns, like, the town diner, and basically, like, asks him to bring some liquor to the house because she ran out of it, and she said that she would be very appreciative when he got there. I wonder what that means. Well, we know what it means because the next scene it shows her in a fucking bathrobe walking him out the door. So, yeah.
She just made him cookies and, when that happened, something spilled on her clothes and she needed to go put on a bathrobe.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And the other thing too about this movie, all the men wear back braces for some reason. I'm not sure if that's a metaphor for something too. Like, what's with the weird back brace thing? Dutch wears one, and because he almost forgets it, she's like, "Oh, you forgot something," and she gives him his back brace. But then later on, the dude who owns the farm has a back brace too. It's like, okay.
Well, I think the dude who had it first, because that was when he almost forgot it when he was sleeping with the barmaid.
Oh.
And then, because he almost forgot it when he was going to go home to be with Ev.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't want to forget this. Yeah. And yeah. I don't.
This is the important stuff of the movie we're talking about here.
Yeah, I don't know if it was. Was it a back brace or was it something to slim his stomach to make him look better? Which is.
Well, I think that was before they started making those things. Oh, I mean, okay. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, they've had those things for years. They've had corsets for, you know,
well,
since the Middle Ages or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
I don't know. Yeah, these are the important things to talk about this movie. Not the giant spider. The back race really needs to have, like, a 20-minute long...
it's the most important part of the movie. And I think the back brace is symbolic of the fact that society is bracing up the man and not the woman.
Yeah.
I think this whole movie is like a feminist manifesto written by men.
Of course it got written by men because those are the real feminists, of course. I gotta prove how much of a feminist I am by talking over you women. See? No, what she really means is this. I got your back, okay? because that oppresses both men and women in their own unique ways. You see, the back brace is like, this man is tired, he needs rest, and society's like, no, you get back to work, you know. So
yes,
yeah, man, yeah,
that's what the whole movie's about. It's about society's obsession with sex.
Yeah. So, what else happened?
we have another feminist scene in the movie when the doctors meet each other, and we have this doctor from NASA go to meet the local, I don't know, astronomy doctor person.
Astronomy. Yeah, that's what she was. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got to emphasize the fact that in the scene when they meet, he goes there and he's like, I must be here to meet your husband. Oh no, I mean your father.
Right.
Your brother. Or, you know, just like, well, actually, I'm the doctor. You know, see, I'm telling you, this movie's a. It's like,
no, I remember that scene. It was so awkward to watch because it's like, oh my God, dude. Like, but they never mentioned it after that. That was the only, like, I was like hoping this would be like a, like, oh, you know, you assume I can't be a doctor because I'm a woman. She just let it go. I'm like, what the fuck, lady? But whatever.
Well, no, what it's telling you, Matt, is that once you are told that women can have power and be in powerful positions, men readily accept that.
Yeah, but it's very.
I'm being sarcastic. Anyways,
very underhanded way of doing it because like nothing came from that other than like, oh, okay, I guess a woman can be astronomer. Awesome! Like that's some big fucking revelation. Like,
see what I'm saying is it's showing how easily we as a society can accept women in roles of power and intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, because this movie came out in 1970 fucking five, and we still don't even have a woman president yet. We still have the Me Too movement, Hollywood, involved that Weinstein bullshit, you know. So see, yeah, see, so this, much has progressed in 45 years.
This movie was just years ahead of itself.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately.
But, no, God. I know it wasn't, Matt.
I know it wasn't. Yeah, I do remember that scene though. I'm like, oh God, this is awkward. He keeps like listing off all these different male relatives. I'm like, okay, but think about logically, why else would she be there? Like,
the original scene was him, you know, just mentioning, you know, like 40 different types of people that could have been the.
Like your cousin, your third cousin, your uncle, your step uncle, you know.
Then he started being like, you know, positions she could be. It's like, what are you, the janitor? Are you the maid? Or right. Are you the, you know.
Right.
God, it was the most awkward scene I've seen in a movie in years.
It was. And then right after that, she goes, offers him tea. I'm like, okay, so you just blew the point. Like, he's like, what the fuck is this movie trying to do? Like.
Well, it's trying to show you that in society, women can be two different types of.
Yeah, I think we're looking way too into that.
I know that this movie is, you know, hailed by women world round for the steps that it made in you know, furthering the rights of women in society, and you know, people like Gloria Steinem and others have praised this great film. I'm assuming.
I don't think so.
Probably not. Oh God.
If only, and again, there's many other reasons why not, but if only for the reason of the creepy underage step niece or whatever type of thing going on. By the way, she's topless at one point in the movie, so I'm not even sure of the legality of that shit going on. But well,
actress probably was over 18 at the time when they
filmed. Okay, good, because I was like, that is not something I want to see.
I'm assuming she was, but now I need to look into it because I'm worried.
Well, again, it was only for like a second, but so whatever. But yeah, this movie. All right, so you want to talk about the actual spiders in this movie?
Yes, let's talk about that a little bit, Matt. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, the spiders were genius, man. I mean, they look so real. I mean, I was so afraid when I saw them like hop out of the dresser at the house. Or like when it's crawling around in the fields and like swallowing people whole and just like leaving like a tiny little carcass, you know, that's left over. The blender scene was pretty hilarious where the drunk wife is making herself a Bloody Mary and the spider crawls in the blender and she doesn't know it. And she turns it on and then she takes a drink of it and drinks spider. Gross.
I do that all the time.
What, you make spider Bloody Marys, spider Marys?
Yes, I put Lysol, spiders,
and bleach.
And
because our dear leader, dear Fuhrer, said, you know, hey, you know, you could cure the coronavirus by, you know, giving yourself disinfectant inside of your body. So. There you go.
But he claimed it was sarcasm, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I used to know kids like that in junior high who would humiliate themselves and then be like, oh, it was a joke! Yeah, you're making it worse than yourself.
Because the greatest place in the world to talk about, to be sarcastic, is at a press briefing 6 weeks into a pandemic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you remember that great scene in Independence Day when Bill Pullman, as the president, came out and he started making jokes about the alien invasion.
Yeah, those are in the deleted scenes. They're really good, though.
You remember the scene in this movie that we're talking about when Alan Hale is the sheriff came on TV and started making sarcastic jokes about how we're being invaded by spiders.
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
That's awesome.
Neither one of those things fucking happened in the movies because the movies make more sense than the fucking reality.
Yeah, Skipper / Sheriff Chucklefuck, you know, didn't even make jokes about the giant spider.
No. At least not at a press conference.
Yeah, maybe when he was drinking at the diner, that's one thing, but you know, not when you're on the job. You know, you're all business. I mean, come on.
Oh God.
Jesus Christ. By the way, in the movie, he's getting a bunch of phone calls at first when people are having issues with like their cars not starting like the I just did a Boston accent by mistake. Cars not starting. No, I can't do it now. It was I only did it once by accident.
Park your car in Harvard Yard.
So anyone who's like under the age of 25, 22 years old, he mentions at some point for a person to go look through the Yellow Pages, and I need to explain that. So Yellow Pages were a book of phone numbers back in the day, and they had like the phone numbers of like businesses, you know, and the White Pages were like for like regular people's phone numbers, some businesses, but the Yellow Pages were more like, I think you had to pay maybe a little bit more to get in the Yellow Pages. Not sure, but those were the more, you know, popular businesses in town. Just wanted to throw that little factoid out there.
Yes. That is something good to throw out of the movie.
Literally, no. No one needs them anymore. Well, you know, unless they don't have a cell phone, but whatever.
Yeah.
So the spiders. Okay, the spiders were huge, and they looked like toys. Like, they literally looked like stuffed animal toys, like the ones coming out of the dresser, at least, that were attacking.
Well, I think a lot of them were real.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the because, I mean, a lot of times they were crawling around on the ground for real, so.
Oh.
I think the ones coming out of the little coconut-shaped pods that they came out of were real little tarantulas or something.
Oh God. Ugh.
Yeah.
Scares me.
Yeah. Spiders don't freak me out that much. Maybe if they're crawling on me they would. But
they would. I got a weird relationship with spiders myself. I mean, I don't like them.
Were you married to one at one time? And
yeah, no, I was. No, like I always like never wanted to like destroy cobwebs because I just felt bad that, like, you know, spider put all this effort into, you know, setting up a trap for, you know, unsuspecting creatures to murder and eat, and then I felt bad, you know, destroying that trap for them because, like, you know, they need to eat too, and like, I don't know, they're not actually, a lot of spiders are very playful, even, like, they're not as scary as, you know, as people think they are. But I would never have one as a pet, but like, I used to be a spider in my bedroom a long time ago. And we got this weird thing, like, where, like, it would literally crawl out of its nook if I was, like, had to lie down for too long, and would literally just, like, stare at me for, like, a few seconds, like, disapproving of me, like, you got the light on, boy. So I turned the light off, and it goes back to bed. So we kind of had, like, our own, like, we kind of synced up our sleeping schedules, which was nice. Then it bit me, and I got a terrible infection. But, you know.
That's how my last relationship was. Like.
Oh! Ba-da-bum. Wow. So that had nothing to do with the movie. But, nah. So the spiders. Spiders are all over the place in this town. They're getting bigger. The eggs have these, like, shitty-looking diamonds that are apparently worth nothing. But if you have, like, a whole bunch of them, they're worth a lot. So Farm Boy with the back brace wants to collect a bunch of them so he can become rich. He tries to bribe his underage step-niece with sex. She rejects him because she doesn't think that the diamonds are really worth anything or they're not real diamonds. Then he goes off like, oh, well, I'm going to find more. He gets killed by the giant spider. And then the wife gets killed first. She gets killed first, and then he gets killed like a day later. And then the dude's cousin has the diamond. He tries to bribe her for sex. She rejects him. So at least she's rejecting these creepy old guys. You know, that's nice. There's a good feminist tale for you right there. So she's like the younger generation. See, she's like the one. She's the one that's gonna push the progress even further. You know what I mean? So like, no, I'm looking into it too deep. But like, I lost my train of thought.
Oh boy, this movie was fun. I literally actually enjoyed it. So I don't know.
Wasn't that bad. That's the thing.
Okay, Matt. So how did this movie like wrap up?
So, in addition to all the cool stuff about the movie, like the back braces and all the diamond shit, the boring stuff,
and the phone calls.
Oh, yeah, and the phone calls and the yellow pages. Yeah, the boring stuff happens now with the spiders attacking people, you know, ripping them in half or swallowing them whole. You know, boring shit. You don't want to watch that stuff. But the best part of it is that the giant spider is obviously a fucking car, a bug to be exact, with like spider legs attached to it. I mean, it's so painfully obvious that a car is driving this thing around town. And then you got these, militia townspeople, like everybody owns a gun, of course, you know, and they're like, we're gonna kill a spider, and then like, you know, like just creating like this sort of mob mentality, and then the sheriff is trying to like, you know, hold them down or whatever, but they won't listen to him, so they're all like, we're all gonna fight the spider together, and it doesn't do shit, you know, the rifles, and the spider's like attacking all of them and eating them, and then, you know, they're trying to, you know, shoot off this neutron into the, you know, the place where I don't know exactly where are they going to shoot this neutron into exactly? Just anywhere or like,
I don't know.
Somewhere. Anyway, the plan was that somehow this would open the time-space portal where the spider came from and would kind of put them back to where they were, but it didn't. All it did was make the spider, like, melt into this weird sludge, which doesn't really make any sense to me, because it's like, if you're trying to get the spider to go back to its time and place, why wouldn't it just do that? Why would it just melt its skin? I don't understand that logic, but again, I don't really think the science in here really holds up, so...
Well, you know, whenever I want to go back home, like if I leave my house, I have to turn into like some kind of goo before I can, because that's how science works.
It is how science works. So they kill us, this kill us thing, you know, the townspeople finally, no, at one point they go through like a baseball game or something like that, or I don't remember, they're in a field at one point, and... No, it wasn't. It was a festival. It was a what was it, like a Polish festival or something? Or
yeah, some kind of carnival of some sort or something. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So the thing is chasing everyone at this carnival, and you just see, and they use this as like the photograph for like the movie itself. You see these people running away from this giant spider, which is obviously a car, chasing people down in like this field. And like, I know I'm missing some things here, but then like, they shoot off the neutron, and the spider melts into like this disgusting looking sludge. And then like, I think at one point though, like at the very last minute, it shows like one little spider, like somehow managed to survive. And then it freezes, but then they go into that preacher doing his fire and brimstone sermon, talking about like the end of time. So it's like, I'm not sure if that was supposed to like build up to a sequel that never got made or whatever.
Yeah, probably. You know, the giant spiders invade again or something.
Yeah, some bullshit. And this time it's the PT Cruiser. Well, that would be before the PT Cruiser came, but.
Oh boy. So yeah, that was That was a great movie.
Yeah, it was.
So, do you want to hear some trivia here, Matt?
Sure.
Okay. There was supposed to be a dramatic shot of the giant spider crushing the house by having the spider drop from a crane onto it while a bulldozer chained to a back of the house would pull away. However, when the shot was filmed, the spider's legs all went straight up in the air. The crew inside working its arms were nearly killed when broken wood from the demolished house went through the spider, coming close to impaling them. Yeah. See, this movie was so important for its feminist message that crew members were willing to die for the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. That's what happened.
Yes. In the opening, Alan Hale Jr. greets Kevin Brody with the line, "Hi, little buddy." This is an obvious reference to. It's an obvious restaurant. Obvious reference to Hale's role as the skipper on Gilligan's Island, where he called Gilligan little buddy all the time.
That's awesome. I didn't pick up on that. By the way, that should be the name of a restaurant. Obvious restaurant.
You just serve like basic food.
Yeah, it's got a picture of food on it. It says obvious. Like, come on, you know what this is. Yeah.
You can't even. It's like, what do you want to eat? Well, here it is. There was supposed to be a shot of a big spider in a tree bursting into flames. To achieve this, the director covered a large prop spider with gunpowder and had two crew members sitting above it in the tree, who would drop a match on the spider. The director got the camera up to the very fast frames per second to achieve a slow motion look and had them drop the first match. Nothing happened. So they dropped a second. Still nothing happened. So they lit the entire book of matches and dropped it onto the spider with nothing happening. The director turned off the camera, and immediately afterwards, a huge explosion and fireball shot up, burning the hair off the crew members and starting several small brush fires. The director was furious that he wasn't able to get the shot on film.
Jesus Christ.
These guys lost their fucking hair because of a fucked up. Oh my God. The framework for the VW, the Volkswagen Giant Spider, was recently found in the woods and put on display in Gleason, Wisconsin.
Found in the woods.
Yeah, they just left it there when they were done filming. Yeah.
Wow.
This was a surprise box office success. It was one of the top 50 grossing movies of 1975.
You gotta think, remember too, this was competing with Jaws.
Yeah. I mean, Jaws was obviously the top grossing film that year, but still.
Yeah. And they mentioned Jaws in the movie at some point,
yeah,
too.
So this was really made fast, I guess.
Yeah.
In a scene depicting the giant spiders attacking a Little League baseball game, the spiders are obviously Volkswagen Beetles with puppet legs attached. Tread marks can be seen in several shots. In May of 2005, there was a Bill Redbain Film Festival in Madison, Wisconsin, that featured this film. Hosting the festival were Michael J. Nelson and Kevin Murphy of the TV series Mystery Science Theater 3000, which had featured the Great Spider Invasion in a 1997 episode. Nelson and Murphy said, despite their lampooning of the film on MST3K, they actually admired Redbain because he was able to make the film with such a low budget. stars Steve Brody and Barbara Hale pulled in family members to play supporting roles in the film. Brody's son, Kevin Brody, played Dave Perkins, and Hale's husband, Bill Williams, came in to play the role of Dutch, as we stated earlier. The film is listed among the 100 most enjoyable bad movies ever made in John Wilson's book, The Official Razzies Movie Guide. cost about $300,000 to make. According to Rabane,
yeah, I said Red. I can't pronounce things tonight. So.
The two writers on the film each approached the story from different directions. Richard L. Huff wrote the original story and kept a very serious tone to the first draft of the script. Robert Easton, on the other hand, lent the film a comical tone, writing most of the colorful dialogue for his character, the creepy uncle, and other locals. The film's rather infamous jokes are credited to him as well. Combining both writers' material resulted in an oddball tone for the script. Yeah, it's such a interesting film. Stephen King is a big fan of the film as well. The book that Alan Hale Jr. is always reading in the sheriff's office is titled Flying Saucers Want You. Well, at least somebody wants me.
The spiders want you.
Do they?
Think so.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
There's one on your shoulder right now.
No! I'm scared!
And now I need a Spider Mary. That's going to be a new drink of mine. The spider, you know, I'm going to take a Bloody Mary and I'm going to put a spider in it. Spider Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the name of the spider. Mary.
Yeah. Oh, this makes it sad.
Poor Mary. She was turned into goo.
Yeah, it has a name now.
It's like you can't kill a turkey after you name it and then eat it or something, you know.
Personalize something and then, you know.
Okay, I found some reviews here, Matt. Here's one that I'm going to read about the movie. This is a 10 out of 10. Posted by Alice Spiral on the Internet Movie Database here back in February 17th of 2007, shortly after Valentine's Day, by the way. her headline is "Never ill treat spiders because they'll have you." All spiders who were ever killed go into outer space and are reborn, and because of messages passed along the spider grapevine, they come back in pods. And Wisconsin obviously has a higher rate of spider killers, so this is why they are there. I mean, people were flattening spiders with irons for no good reason. The only ones spared are spider lovers, and they know who they are. Anyway, this is one of my favorite types of horror movie bug attacks. For a low-budget movie, it's as good as you could expect. Plenty of suspense and plenty of silly panicking people. The DVD has the director talking about how the movie was made, and it seems it was in extreme discomfort as the temperature was well over 110.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's a 2 out of 10 review from Aaron1375 from October 25th, which is right before Halloween. of 2002. Well, there is one giant spider. Why this movie is called Giant Spider Invasion, I will never know. For one, there is only one giant spider. Two, it isn't really an invasion. The plot starts at some redneck's home where from out of the blue something lands in their backyard. Then a bunch of TV stars and B-movie stars try to figure out what happened. Then a giant spider, which I believe is really a dune buggy terrorizing the countryside. For the most part, the spiders are just tarantulas, which are rather big but not giant. You would love the scene where they discuss black holes and how they relate to the spiders, as well as how they kill the spiders, because it's a clear example of cheap movie science. Okay, so that was that.
Okay. Got all that wrong, but okay.
Yeah, I know.
because it's called the Giant Spider Invasion, not the Giant Spiders Invasion, so it can be only one. It's fine. Whatever.
Can an invasion be just one thing, though?
I don't know. Maybe not. I always assumed anything.
Well, I guess because they call it a home invasion when a guy breaks into your house.
Right. And plus, too, some of the spiders did grow up and get bigger. So they actually, there were multiple giant spiders. I mean, they weren't all as big as like the Volkswagen one was, but there were a few that were actually like almost like human size. So whatever. So or maybe not. Maybe that. What's that?
Oh, I was going to say, here's another review if you want to hear it.
Sure.
It's called Movie of the Year by Sheepy. Mm-hmm. And this was written on March 4th of 2000, which was around some kind of holiday, I'm sure. Anyways. man, was this an absolute perfect movie. Brilliant. Exciting acting, interesting dialogue, excellent music. The story just blew me away. It was so enthralling and incredibly original. This was a wonderfully excellent movie. I could not find any defect in it. I've watched it over and over. Everything about it is perfect. The acting is flawlessly good. I can't believe this movie was made in 1975. The special effects are unbelievably amazing. The giant spider looks so realistic. 10 out of 10, a perfect movie. Grab some popcorn and get ready to be entertained by the giant spider invasion. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was all sarcasm.
It sounds like
But I don't know. You know, sarcasm is kind of a interesting topic these days.
yeah.
Unless you call out, back. Yeah, unless you call it sarcasm, who knows? So Matt, would you recommend this movie to anybody?
Sure. I mean, it's fun. You know, it's kind of stupid, but you know, like get some friends together, you know, later on if we can still do that. And why do I don't mean that sarcasm? I just mean, you know.
Well, I know.
You know, get a group of friends together and just kind of, you know, watch a bad movie on purpose. And because, you know, we reviewed a lot of bad movies on this show, and you know, we've discovered that there are movies that are so bad that they're funny, and there are some that are just so bad they're boring. This is not the boring kind.
No, not at all. I enjoyed it thoroughly, actually. And like I said, this is the greatest feminist manifesto to come out of cinema in the last 100 years. And, oh, wow. Yes. You know, Norma Jean and all those other movies that are about, you know, feminists and stuff. And, you know, nope. This movie is the greatest movie to, help further the, you know, feminist values in society. And by the way, I am being sarcastic. This is what real sarcasm is.
Yep.
I just want to teach that to people listening.
because saying something seriously in a press conference and then the next day calling it sarcasm is not sarcasm. Most of the things I say in my life are sarcasm, and you can tell that by the snarky way I say them. When you say them directly to a doctor in a press conference being televised worldwide, in a serious tone, that is not sarcasm.
Nope.
No. But yes, this is the greatest feminist manifesto ever put to film. And I highly recommend everyone watch this movie. And yeah. I'm not talking about just, you know, people that want to watch a bad movie. I'm saying this is the greatest movie to come out in 1975 besides Jaws.
Well, that's a lot of movies that came out in 1975.
Yeah. I'm sure that there might have been some other movies in 1975. Okay, so, I mean, this movie came out the same year as Jaws, as we've said. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, wow.
Shampoo. Dog Day Afternoon. The Return of the Pink Panther.
Ah.
3 Days of the Condor. Funny Lady. The Other Side of the Mountain. Tommy, The Apple Dumpling Gang, Rollerball. That's just a few. Barry Lyndon came out that year. French Connection 2, Stepford Wives. You know, all these, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, all these shitty movies that are nowhere near as good as the giant spider invasion.
Yep.
Because tell me, do any of those have a good feminist manifesto buried deep within their plots?
I mean, not even close, especially Return of the Pink Panther. That's just mockery right there. Yes. You know, they use the color pink as a way to actually, you know, make fun of women as opposed to, you know, lifting them up, you know. So,
yes.
You know, it's obvious, you know, just mockery that's just oozing out of those kind of movies, you know.
And then you have the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is just totally downplaying the idea of femininity by having, you know, Tim Curry dress up like a woman.
Oh, I know, yeah, because, you know, transgender people are so bad, you know, they're, you know. Anyway,
This is sarcasm, yeah, by the way, people.
That definitely is sarcasm.
Yes. Oh, boy.
God. So, I tell you what, though, Tim Curry can pull off any look he wants.
Oh, yeah.
Any look he wants.
Tim Curry is a god. Anyways, mm-hmm. So, anything else, Matt, before we sign off today?
You know what? Well, I am going to set up, you know, a website soon. I don't have it, you know, ready right now, but, you know, where I'm going to, you know, kind of put, you know, like a lot of my music and stuff on, like sell my albums and stuff like that. So, you know, whenever I get that up, I'll maybe I'll plug that, you know. Maybe, you know, other stuff too, some of my articles, some of my writings, just, you know, a general creative space, you know, of mine. All of the brilliance and the not so brilliant craziness that comes out of my mind will probably be up on that site at some point. So,
I mean, for right now, you might want to follow Matt on Facebook. He's got a fan page, Matthew Haas.
I think it's called Matthew. I always forgot the name. Is it Matthew? No, it's Hostility. It's
Well, the actual fan page is is just Matthew Haas.
Yeah, yeah. You search for it and you'll see like a superhero looking version of myself. That's me,
Mike does this great Photoshop work, and he basically made me look like a really muscular superhero dude. It's pretty awesome. And then I used that, you know, picture.
Yeah, just look for that fan page, and I'm sure that in the near future, yeah, links to your website will be up there.
Yep. All right. So I'm gonna play. I'm gonna play a little song or a little music to kind of commemorate this great spider, as well as to kind of say sorry, you know, to the spider, you know, that they had to kill it, you know, because, you know, it wasn't his fault or her fault. Probably her fault, because this is, again, like a feminist anthem, you know, for being kind of taken into a different time and space world that, you know, doesn't belong in, and was just trying to eat some food. I mean, that's what all living things needs food to live. So sorry to the spider, but, you know, here's a little song, you know, for that.
Okay. Let's get situated here. Situated. There we go. Giant spider, giant spider, it wants to eat its diamonds, pay for sex. That's the end of the song.
That was like the greatest song I've ever heard in my life.
Thanks. By the way, just for anyone who's listening, my real music is much better than that. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, so if you've listened to the show, the theme song to the show is written by Matt and things of that nature. So, but no, that was the greatest song I've ever heard in my life. It's right up there with anything by Justin Bieber. Or New Kids on the Block, or Sonny and Cher.
Sonny and Cher. Yeah.
Those three artists.
Yeah. Those three.
And you.
Yeah.
Are the four greatest artists of all time.
Wow. It's a tall order.
Well, I shouldn't be so sarcastic about that, because you actually are talented. Anyways, unlike
that's fine. Yeah. No, it's so obvious, just like the restaurant, you know. So yeah.
Yes, you
know, the obvious restaurant has obvious music in the restaurant too.
Yes, it's like it's not really Muzak or anything. It's just there.
It's just there. It's obvious. I mean,
yes. It's just obvious restaurant music. So, before we go, make sure you, check out CullenPark.com. We got stuff on there. Right now, if you also check the links in the show notes, there's a link to a really cool Cullen Park Productions t-shirt that you can get. It's only $20. It's got a really cool our logo on it, but the cool thing about it is $10 of that goes to help further our adventures in podcasting and filmmaking. Also, the other $10 goes to a company that I really love called Jupe Mode that is located in Toledo, Ohio, where we are based. And during these tough times, supporting local businesses is really important. And whether it's local to you or just local to, somewhere, because everything starts out as a local business. And it's better to support a local business that has a possibility of going out of business due to this pandemic than some big corporations, you know?
Yeah.
And so I say buy a shirt. You know, they've got other shirts on their website, too. I'd prefer it if you buy one of ours. But they've got a lot of cool other shirts on there, too. Buy one of ours. Buy one of anything that they have on there. They've got a lot of cool ones that are also supporting a lot of other local businesses, which is really cool.
Also, check out our Patreon and, donate, help support us, right now, especially we, you know, are looking for, ways to make sure that this podcast continues and we can continue to bring you the great films of feminist manifestos that we do all the time, because every single one of our films has that underlying current to it.
Yeah. You know what we should do, though?
What?
At one point, we should do a counterpoint, and we should do a men's rights activist film, which is pretty much every film. And then,
like Mean Girls. And,
oh, God. We're so weird.
I know. So, anyways, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about anymore. I think this is all getting to me, Matt.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'm being invaded by giant spiders right now.
You know what, though? This one was a long one, though. It's good, though. One's not a short episode, so that's good.
Yes. So, hopefully you enjoyed this. Also, I mean, feel free to email us if you have any suggestions for any movies you want us to talk about. We're more than happy to take your suggestions and do that. Also, another thing about those t-shirts that I was talking about, I forgot to mention. If you buy one and then send a screenshot of your receipt to mike@cullenpark.com, and you live in the Toledo area or are willing to travel to it, you can be an extra in a future film that we have.
Ooh.
So, yeah. And I mean, and if you don't want to do that, this isn't broadcast anywhere besides on here. If you want to be on a future episode of our podcast, we can set that up too. Buy a shirt and let us know, and you can come on and talk about any movie you want to.
Any movie.
Yes.
Well, not any movie. I mean,
we're not going to talk about, we're not going to talk about porn or snuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, don't try to find some kind of loophole, you know, no. Yeah.
Any film within reason that kind of would fit the mold of our show. Yes. But just, you know, send that to mike@cullenpark.com. And, other than that, like Matt's page, like our page, do it up.
Dub it up.
Dub it up. And dab it up and, doob it up and, whatever. Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. Right.
Peace, love, and wash your hands. Stay safe, people. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.